Well, as I said, last week we concluded our marriage part. Now we're into parenting, and there's some good reason for these lessons. First of all, we, being parents or grandparents, we can always use a refresher on why parenting is so important and what methods or principles or strategies we can employ as parents. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter to me if the children hear. It just doesn't matter. We're going to understand what needs to be done, I hope. And if they hear that, then that's fine. In fact, I want them to hear that. I want our children to be taught how to be, in due time, good parents. Young families in particular need counseling and advice. Whether they accept it or not is another question, but they still need it. None of us are born expert parents, and all of us who are parents, especially have raised our children at least to teenagehood, because I can't go beyond that by personal experience, understand that parenting is a trial and error procedure, if you will. And yet, we are striving to do what is right. And many of us have had poor role models at home. I understand that. As single parenting statistics increase, grandparents find themselves virtually raising their grandchildren. Not just seeing them on occasion like it used to be, but now taking them into their home in some cases, being deeply involved in their grandchildren's lives, being a predominant guiding force in those children's lives. Parenting is a primary factor in molding any child's future, including that how that child sees himself or herself, how they value themselves, how they value other people, the respect for authority, and especially for God and His Word, a sense of purpose in life, etc. All these things will come out in our lessons here. And then parents who are committed to the Word have a moral obligation to immerse their children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. In other words, this is what we do. This is what we're supposed to do as Christian parents. We are to bring up our children in a certain way. And yes, we will answer to God if we refuse or neglect to do that. Someone says, I'm already a good parent. I don't understand why I have to listen to this lesson. All right. Well, if you are a good parent, that's an excellent thing. Maybe you have something to share with those who are struggling. Okay? And maybe in some cases, we're not always measuring ourselves, though, by the perfect standard. And that, of course, would be the Word itself. It's just like what we saw in the case of marriage. Someone says, I already have a good marriage. And then we start looking at that marriage and we realize that maybe it's not being measured rightly by the right standard. So, on the other hand, some of you are far better and more experienced parents than I am. So you're probably thinking, what are you going to teach me? Well, maybe nothing. If nothing else, I'm going to bring to your reminder or to your memory here as a reminder the things that need to be taught. And I respect what you have done. I've watched a lot of you bringing up your children. And I've learned myself from several of you. Some of the best advice I've ever gotten from child raising has not come out of books. It's come out of personal advice and counseling that was given to me by Christian parents who cared. Okay? And so that's really where I'm at now. I'm one of those Christian parents who cares. And you can listen to this and take from it what you will. Someone has to say something, though, right? And I would ask that you would take to heart the messages of the next couple weeks here. It's no secret here. Every great leader, statesman, inventor, engineer, scientist, author, artist, and entrepreneur who impacted history, for better or worse, was once a child in the home of his mother and father. In other words, that course that person took started somewhere and was set in a certain direction by those two people. Those parents ingrained within that child a set of values, the seeds of their future religious beliefs, a sense of morality, and the development of that child's thinking and often their life skills that led them into adulthood. This has not always gone well, but it's always gone that way. Okay? In other words, parents have a powerful impact, a powerful influence on children. In past centuries, more often than not, children were brought up with an impressive familiarity with the Scripture and an appreciation for God and a God-created world. That's changing here. As modern society sinks into godlessness, this trend is reversing. And more children than ever are being brought up to embrace godless views and godless behaviors and godless values. This is another reason why we do lessons like this, is to resist that great onslaught of the world's, inundating our children's lives and our own families. While the education system is often blamed, the reason why the education system is given so much latitude and influence is because many parents have abdicated their moral responsibility, and they have made the schools and the education system kind of a surrogate parent. So we can all blame the schools and the institutions and so on, but the fact is there's a track record of, in a very general sense, parents who have abdicated their role in the home. And that is what has led to where we are today. The point I'm making here is that parenting has a powerful influence on how the world will be in coming generations. If enough parents train their children to honor and respect God, imagine how this world would look here in just a few generations. Let me just think about that. If we had all the parents of the United States of America suddenly deciding to train their children to honor God and respect God and His Word, can you imagine what this would be like? This would be truly a God-fearing and Christian nation. As it is, that's not necessarily happening. In fact, if many parents train their children how to be selfish and immoral and to thumb their nose at God, well, then you can imagine what this world is going to be like here in just a few generations. So parents have a powerful place in the direction of how our future is going to turn out. And that's why you should see yourself as a parent or as a grandparent, or in some cases as a great-grandparent, right? You should see yourself having that kind of powerful impact on not only your children, but on the future itself. Now, we Christians would like to think that the church of tomorrow is already being groomed in the homes of Christian believers today. And in some cases, this is true. And it is good to see that. But this is not always the case, and I want to give some reasons for that so that we can address those if indeed this is part of your situation here. Statistics and simple observation proves otherwise. There's a greater number, by far a greater number of children leaving behind their parents' religion than there are who are embracing it and perpetuating it. We have said before in this series, back in January, I expect all of you to remember all of these statistics. Okay, maybe not. But we did talk about 75 to 80% of all the children who are brought up in the church, in the Lord, however you want to phrase that, they leave the Lord, they leave the church by the time they go into college. That is a statistic that is just nagging and persistent. It's not going away easily. And it's not all due to poor parenting. I want to be clear on that. But an unflattering percentage of that is attributed to simply poor direction. Parents today, even Christian parents, are often too busy and distracted to provide the kind of teaching and mentoring that their children require. And I might say much of this too busyness is self-inflicted. It doesn't have to be this way, it's just chosen lifestyle. And it can be unchosen, therefore. Some Christian parents seem to be living in denial of the evidence of their own children's lives. They have convinced themselves that they are good parents, and yet we see their children sometimes, and I'm being very general in my observation here, and I'm not limiting this at all to this congregation, but we do see the children of Christian parents sometimes. They are without discipline. They have little respect for adults. They have little reverence for God. They also have a poor work ethic. And we look at all this evidence and we say, something's going wrong here. Something's not working. You can't blame parents for everything a child does. I understand that. But at the same time, you have to take into account the role of a parent and the direction that the parent has in leading that child to the right place. Some Christian parents confuse doting on their child with effective parenting. They say things or think things like, well, since I spend so much time with my child or on my child, therefore that makes me a good parent. And I don't want to be unpopular here, but I'm here to tell you that it doesn't really matter how much time you spend on or with your child. It's not just quantity of time that's important. It's also the quality and the substance of that attention that is important. Not every time, not all the time. I understand that. But there's got to be times when, you know, the goofing off and the trying to be your child's buddy and all that stuff that you're maybe trying to do, that needs to all be put aside. And you need to focus on, okay, I'm the parent, you're the child, and I have something very, very important to impart to you. And it can't just be something you do once in a while. And it's not something that you do once and then you're done. Like when my child was 5 years old, we had a heart-to-heart conversation about God. And now they're 13 and you've never talked about it again. It just doesn't work that way. You parents who have done it well, because this is what you've taught me, you have done this consistently. Not just at 5, but also 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and on. Some Christian parents simply do not actively teach their children about God or Jesus or the Bible at home. They leave that teaching to Bible classes and sermons and passive instruction. Some parents, Christian parents, place more value on giving gifts and toys and material wealth to their children rather than the lasting wealth of a well-rounded spiritual education, which will take them into eternity. I want you to think about this, parents. Which kind of gift are you giving to your child? This doesn't mean you can't give material gifts. It means that if you're giving material gifts instead of spiritual impartation of knowledge and wisdom, you've got it backwards, okay? And so, and again, I have learned successfully from many of you who have got it going in the right direction, and now I want to give that information to all other parents who might not have heard that yet. I want to list a couple problems here today that are very, very familiar in our secular society that have crept into the churches. We see this more and more increasingly common in the churches. First of all, failing to recognize that your child is a child and not a mini adult. Your child ought not to have all the same privileges that you and your spouse enjoy. Now, this is going to come as a shock to some of you. When our kids were little, honey and I would go through the drive-thru at Starbucks sometimes and, are you ready? Not get our kids anything. I know, it's almost child abuse. And I didn't apologize for it either, okay? Because we went there for ourselves to get us some coffee. We did not go there because we felt like we had to, you know, out of guilt or, you know, some kind of other moral responsibility, we had to turn to the kids and say, okay, and now what do you want? As they got older, sometimes we'd buy them stuff, and sometimes we'd go into a Starbucks or somewhere else, and I tell the kids, you're on your own, okay? And I don't feel bad doing that. They've got money, they've got spending money, they've earned that, and why should I have to put out for them all the time? And I don't do that a lot, but I do that sometimes just to impress upon them that going out to eat or even going out to get coffee costs something. And I want to show them that. But my whole point here is that you don't have to give your, especially younger children, everything that you have. In fact, I think you're doing a great disservice when you do that. Your child ought not to have equal billing as an adult. In other words, if you're invited to an adult get-together, that means don't bring your children. And I know what comes back is, and we're seeing this more and more in the churches because this is a social mentality of our world today that's creeping into our churches where someone brings their child anyway and then they excuse themselves by saying, well, but my child is, they won't say it, but more precocious and, you know, more able to mingle with adults and everything else. It's like, your child's just a child, okay? He may be precocious, but he's still a child. This was an adult thing, and you see what I'm saying? Let me recommend something else to you. Just throw this out here. When we go to potlucks at someone's house or some get-together as the brethren here, we get together, and it's time to eat. I'd strongly recommend having those children who are old enough to dish up their own food wait until the adults get theirs. That sends a very powerful message that adults have more privilege and they are to be respected more than children. This is not demeaning to children. It is simply recognizing we are at different stages of life here. And when you start mingling these together and start taking children into the adult world and start treating them like they're little mini adults, you're doing a great disservice to them. Your child ought not to do everything you do. He ought not to see everything you see, hear everything you hear, eat everything you eat, drink everything you drink, or stay up as late as you stay up. There's just no reason for that. The message that we send to our kids when we make them mini adults is, in essence, you ought not to be denied anything because of age, maturity, or experience. Now, I want you to take that and extrapolate that to an entire generation of children who have been brought up in homes where there is no relevancy to age or maturity or experience, that as soon as they see something, they get something. As soon as mom and dad enjoy something, they get to enjoy it too. I want you to think about where that all goes and how destructive that is to our society, this sense of entitlement, that as soon as a child gets to the point where he recognizes that mom and dad have something that he wants, that he's supposed to have it. And we see this sometimes, even with young adults, even with those who are getting their own homes, okay? The material and the things that we have right now, honey and I have in our house, we have been collecting for 20 years. Now, if my children go out and get their own place and they want to get the exact kind of stereo system and the same painting and the same furniture and everything right away, what they're forgetting is that it took us 20 years to get all of that stuff. And for them to expect it or to try to go out and charge it on their credit card so that they can become instant adults with all those privileges, that's just not right. Now, where did we all start out? Well, I didn't start out in a two-story split-level house, I can tell you that. Some of you know my first house. Well, maybe you don't. It was a mobile home. And then I had to live with someone. And then honey and I got married, and we had a little apartment. And then we got that little dinky house out there in Sumner. Some of you remember that? 750 square feet. Okay? That's about the size of my living room and kitchen right now. And we survived, and we started with that. We worked up, and a lot of you are going like this because you all did the same thing. Teach that to your kids. You've got to start out somewhere, and it's not a crime. It's not a bad thing. The lack of denial leads to spoiled children who will not appreciate their turn in learning to enjoy the privileges of adulthood, and they will not value those privileges when they receive them. It's just common sense. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 11 through 14, one of the principles I wanted to extract from that passage, which is usually used about other things, is in essence this: young, untrained, and inexperienced people ought not to be put into positions that require seasoned, trained, and experienced adults. Make the application. In other words, we cannot make adults out of children who are not yet adults and who are not yet prepared to take on that responsibility. Acknowledging our children as children does not demean them. It is not abusive. It is actually realistic. And secondly, it is in their best interest. Take that to heart. Another common problem today is what is often called helicopter parenting, where the parents are hovering over their children's every waking moment. And they are sparing their children of any bad thing that might happen to them, always constantly trying to be there to provide for their child's every moment of happiness, so that the child is constantly being inundated with parental intervention there, so that the parents are getting a new toy. Oh, you're done with that? Oh, let me get you another one. Oh, you're ready for, you want a snack? Let me get that for you. And oh, you made a mess? Let me clean that up for you. And oh, you did this? Let me fix that for you. And let me intervene over here for you. And let me do this over here for you. And you know what that ends up being is a spoiled child scenario. Because now a child has no idea how to cope or function or put into effect all the things that he is supposed to be learning from his parents. And then you're going to take that child and you're going to throw him out into the college world or the career world. And what do you think is going to happen out there? Everyone's going to do the same thing, right? They're going to dote on your child just like you did. Oh, no, it's dog eat dog out there, isn't it? And you didn't train your child to be prepared for that. You see, there's great harm that we can do here. Children need to learn from their mistakes within reason, okay? I don't mean just launch them off and, well, there you go, five-year-old Billy, you know, and you just make whatever mistakes you make. I'm not, you know, be reasonable here. But if mom and dad are always there to clean up every mess and pay for all the damage and offer conflict resolution in every case, how is that child going to learn responsibility? When I was in fifth grade, I was living in Bonnie Lake, and there was we had a lot of trees in our neighborhood at that time. Bonnie Lake still had trees, and so we couldn't see everything. And there was some dog that was over the hill there, and I was throwing rocks at it, and I heard a crash, like glass breaking, and I couldn't even see what I had hit, and I didn't do anything about it. I just ran in the house. And then my mom at dinner time says, I got a call from the neighbor. Someone broke a car window. Do you know anything about that? Melt, you know. And so what had happened was I obviously threw this rock, broke this car window, and I had to work it off. This guy had a big garden, and I had to go out there and weed that garden for several weeks. The fact that I'm still telling you about that experience here now, all these years later, tells you the impact of what I learned from that. I learned that if you do something and break something and you know, violate something, there's a consequence to that. Mom could have went in there and, you know, just kind of made it right with the neighbor and then come put her arm around me and say, there, it's going to be all right. But she didn't. And that was the best thing that she could have done for me, is to not do that. I want you to think about that. That the point here is that we teach our children ahead of time how to reason, how to act, and how to respect each other. But then we have to allow them to learn that, at least to some for some respect there, through trial and error, and to implement that. Don't wait until you're sending them off to college. Don't wait till they're entering a job market, or even worse, entering into marriage. Can you imagine a child like that who goes into marriage? What is he going to expect? Okay? And that's sometimes what happens, is that very thing. Furthermore, your job as a parent is not to gratify your child with an endless pampering and happiness. It is to prepare that child for life, real life here, and also life with God. That's your job. Am I telling you anything new? Not one bit. You've already learned that, but I'm here to remind you of how important this is here. The rest of this lesson, I just want to cover some things here that I'm under the guise of good advice. Okay, you might look at some of this and say, well, that's not necessarily good advice. It's, you know, I can think of better stuff than that. Okay, but the point is, that's what this is intended to be, is it's just offering some good advice. Whether you agree or not, at least listen and take to heart what is being said. First thing I want to say is, don't allow your children to be the parents. If you don't lead your kids, then they're going to lead you, and that's the exact opposite from what God has expected of you as a parent. I say this knowing that there are a lot of parents who have let their children become parents, and the parents are virtual children. And that's sad. And it's also very disrespectful, and it's also really embarrassing, okay? For those of us who take parenting seriously, it's just embarrassing to the rest of us. It is increasingly common to see children, even toddlers, they don't have to be very old, dictating the plans and the agenda and the disposition of two otherwise capable and intelligent adults. God made you the parents, so be parents. Over the number of years of me being a parent, which is now 20 years, nearly, I've walked into many parents' homes, and what I see there is basically a house that is given over to the kids in which the parents happen to live. Okay? In other words, it's just a giant play area for the kids, and the parents have a little corner they call their room, and the rest of the house is dictated by the children. And that mentality, it permeates everything else that you see in that home. When we were parents, parents of young children, we might have brought a toy out into the living room, But as soon as we're done with that, it goes back. Or the kids have their space in their room. But that was it. We did not convert our house to a giant nursery / daycare. And I strongly recommend that you not do that either. In other words, teach the children that you have a space and a place and all that, and it's very important in our lives, but you are not taking over as adults. You are not taking the place of the parents. Instead of your child dictating the schedule, making the decisions, paving the way, you, parent, do that for your child. In Ecclesiastes 10, verse 16, Isaiah chapter 3, verse 4, Isaiah chapter 3, verse 12, there's a consistent message here, and that is that the land in which a child rules is a woeful situation. And that's what God is saying. And I want you to take that same principle now and apply it to a home. The home in which the child rules is a woeful situation. There is a child without direction. There is a child without proper boundaries and constraints. There is a child who is given far more authority and privilege than he ever should have. And there are two parents there who are allowing all of this to happen. It just ought not to be that way. Someone says, I disagree with that. Okay, you can disagree with that. Kids may not admit or realize this, but they need and crave direction. They want to know the right way in which to go. They need boundaries, and they need you to set them, even though they test them constantly. They still need you to tell them how far. Limitations. They also need praise when they do well, but they also need correction when they don't. And you, the parent, are to determine the measurement of those things. There are some parents, mothers and fathers both, who praise their children, only praise their children, because they don't want to hurt their children's feelings. If you're concerned about that, hurting your children's feelings, you should question whether you should have ever become a parent in the first place. Because part of parenting is not to be popular and not to spare your child from ever having hurt feelings. Your job as a parent is to be the responsible leader in that home for that child. In fact, think about this. Does God only praise you for what good things you have done? Does he not only also, rather I should say, correct you and admonish you and redirect you and sometimes painfully? Does he not prune you in order that you might do better? And when you're looking at this and saying, well, I just don't want to hurt, you know, little Jimmy's feelings here. Listen, God is hurting your feelings for your best interest. And it's okay. Hey, you're not going to actively go out and say, today when I wake up, I'm going to go out and hurt my kid's feelings. No, but at the same time, what you're doing as a parent is more important than whether it's popular or not. What God does is provide a healthy and balanced perspective. It is realistic, once again, and it is in our best interest. You are to do the same thing as a parent. Go and do the same. If you properly discipline your child, he or she will learn to respect authority. If you do not, then you have no reason for that child to grow up respecting authority, and you will bear at least the initial responsibility for this. I'm going to talk about discipline in the home in a later lesson, so I'm just kind of touching on this point. Proverbs 13, verse 24 does say, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. And I know how that sounds in our modern, politically correct, ultra hypersensitive, you know, parenting era that we live in today. I understand how negative that might sound. The principle of the matter here is that your child sometimes is going to do wrong things and that needs to be corrected or nipped in the bud, and you as a parent are supposed to do that. It's not just punitive, it's all forms of structure and correction there. Children who are not taught to respect authority in the home will not respect God's authority when they become adults. Why should they? And if they do, it's not because of the parents. It's because they learned on their own from some other source. Your children or grandchildren will live meaningful, productive lives if you tell them no when it is in their best interest. Denying a child something that he does not need or is not ready for is not going to crush that child's spirit. I know it sounds like it will. Like my child came up to me and was fluttering his eyes and doing the whole lip thing, and I just can't resist that. And what you're going to have to do as a parent is be able to say, you know what, pretty good show there. And yet the answer is still no. Because that's what being a parent is all about. In Matthew 16, 24, Jesus says, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must. And the first thing he says is deny himself. Now think about this. If you've taught your children that you ought not to be denied anything and that self-denial is not what we've brought you up to practice, and then Jesus comes along and says the first thing that you need to do as a disciple is deny yourself, that child is not going to have a clue what Jesus is talking about because you have not trained him. Train your children what self-denial is and what denial is, and help them to respect that. It's a good thing. If you've never denied them anything, then what are they going to do when they have to become Christians? Spoiling your child, and I'm talking about as a lifestyle. I'm not talking about a single outing where you take them out for ice cream or something like that. But spoiling your child as a lifestyle not only sets that child on the wrong course, but exposes you for what you really are in that case, an inadequate father or mother who did not learn from the Word of God, because even God tells us either wait or no sometimes, doesn't he? And if God does that for us, why shouldn't we do that for our parents, or children rather, as parents? Why shouldn't we do that, imitating really what God has done for us? Your child needs to be taught the value of time and money and work. If you hand him everything that he needs, pay for everything that he wants, you're teaching him a false values there and a distorted picture of the real world. Because that's not how the real world is. I understand some milk the system and they know the ins and outs and they know all the loopholes, but that's not how it's supposed to be done. The real world is you work for your money, time is important and valuable, work ethic, all that other stuff there has got to be taken into account. These false values and distorted images become burdens that are laid upon the congregation and the church leadership later on. Now we, as a congregation, have to take your child who has not been taught how to respect time, work, or money, and now we have to take that child and retrain them, if possible, so that they can be functional, productive people in the church. When the fact is, you could have helped us all so much just by doing your part in the beginning. Now, again, I'm not saying that you're not doing your part now. What I'm saying is, if you fail to do your part, then this is the result of that. And furthermore, failing to train your child in that way is inconsistent with everything that we read about discipleship. We should be training our children how to be good citizens and good Christians. I have been telling my kids that from a very young age. I've been very open with them. My job as a parent is to teach you how to be a good citizen and a good Christian. And I hope that you are endeavoring in that same direction there, teaching your child how to function in society and also function in God's world. At the same time, realize that just because you trained your child well doesn't guarantee that he or she is going to stay the course. I know that. I understand. I've seen that happen in this own very group here. We've seen that happen where parents did everything that they were supposed to do and the child still said, yeah, I'm not going to do it when they got older. You can't stop that from happening. We're not talking about the child's responsibility here as much as we're talking about your responsibility as parents. Children are naturally lazy and self-absorbed. Someone says, I don't like that word lazy. Okay. Lack of discipline, lack of focus on chores and things that need to get done. They're not lazy when it comes to fun and activities and riding their bikes, okay? But they can be very lazy when it comes to doing things that take work. I speak from experience as a child, and I can also speak from experience as a parent. And you, parent, must teach them how to be efficient with their time and industrious with their abilities. Which means that you must also be efficient with your time and industrious with your abilities because you're supposed to be leading by example. Children initially will learn far more about God from you than they will from Scripture. And so if you're imitating Christ, as you should, 1 Corinthians 11:1, then that's a good thing, and your child will learn a lot about God because of your influence. But if you're not imitating Christ, then they're going to learn incorrectly about God by watching you. So you have a choice as a parent. What am I imparting to my children? Am I teaching them about who God is, or am I teaching them about really who God is not? Learn to lead your child to Christ. Don't just take them to church. This is a huge difference in the outcome, with lifelong rewards if you do it well. Okay? We have a generation of young adults right now who are largely disinterested in God because of this prime factor right here. Where we've had, for the last couple of decades here, parents dragging their kids to church and not really teaching them about Christ. And then as the kids get to college age and young adulthood, they go, you know, enough of that, I'm out of here. And you're looking at this going, what happened? Well, they were converted to church going. They were converted to Bible studies. They were converted to, you know, the liturgy, if you will, the services and all the offerings there. But they never really came to know God. And they never really came to have a conviction in their own heart about Christ. And I'm saying that the parents play a very important role in this. You are not responsible for all of it, but you are responsible for some of it. Anyone can drag their children to a church service, but it takes time and commitment to train your child to understand and appreciate Christ and what He has done for us and what He does for us now and how we are to rightly respond to Him and to serve in His name. That takes time, and that's not easy. Ephesians 6, verse 4, it says that we are to bring our children up, fathers especially, in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That doesn't mean just instruction that happens to have God included in it. What it means is having a spiritual education that intentionally and accurately leads that child to the Lord through this gospel. And of course, you must lead by example, right? Because that's what you do as a parent. Obviously, raising children is not like raising animals or crops. They need your constant vigilance. They need your regular attention and nurturing. They need to be praised. They also need to be corrected. They need you to teach them, not just feed them and clothe them and throw things at them and say, there you go. They need an understanding of what is right from what is wrong, what is good from what is evil. They need you as a mainstay in their lives. They need you, parents, to lead them. Your child is an intelligent human being. Even at a very young age, children are very intelligent. I think any parent knows this, right? How impressive their intelligence level is per their age. But do not confuse intelligence with self-guided or not in need of oversight. And this is where some parents go wrong. They say, my little Jimmy, he's such a bright child. He's so precocious. He's, wow, a year or two or three ahead of his own age group, his peers. And for that reason, I don't need to guide him as much. And I can give him things and he'll be able to be responsible for it. And I could treat him as a mini adult because look how bright he is. And of course, every child's bright, right, to his parents. And you're looking at this scenario and saying, it doesn't really matter because the child is still a child. An 8-year-old child may be very intelligent and very precocious, but the fact is he's still only 8 years old. And you can't treat him like a 25-year-old or a 40-year-old. So take that into account. That child lacks maturity, he lacks experience, and he lacks perspective, and therefore he needs you to be a parent and not just a member of the family. He needs you to teach him those things. And it's not enough to want your children to go to heaven. You must see yourself as one who steers him that way yourself. And if you do not steer him, then you have better understand that someone else is going to take over and start steering him in some other direction. And it may not be the way in which you wanted him to go. God gave you a child or children for good reason. He has a plan for you, and he expects you to take that seriously and to comply. And I'm very glad to see that so many of you have done this. But those of you who need to work on your parenting. Do something while you have opportunity. Don't just say, well, I kind of blown it for, you know, this year or that year, or, you know, my children are grown, therefore I have no influence. Do what you can. And if you can't help your grown children, then take these lessons or these principles here and start teaching your grandchildren. Do what you can. Those who do take this seriously bring great honor to God. And that's what we should be doing. We should be trying to honor our God even through our parenting skills. All right. We have more to say, but at a later time. So we'll talk more tonight and next week. And I appreciate your patience in hearing me out on this. If there's anyone who needs to respond to our lesson this morning or respond to the gospel call, then we give you opportunity during the service at this time. If you need to come forward for any spiritual need, then do so as we stand and sing the song.